Snapper Bottle with you here, 720 WGN. 2:39 in the morning. We're here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. The Winter Olympics are February 9th through the 25th in South Korea, in Pyeongchang, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Somebody who could tell us if we are or not is Andrew Wittenberg. He's a news anchor and reporter out of Utah who covered the Rio Olympics, and he is headed to South Korea pretty soon. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Hey. Good morning. How's it going, Matt?
It's good. Thanks for jumping on with us. We appreciate it. Always nice to meet a new friend.
Anytime.
So,
indeed.
Let's talk Olympics a little bit. The Winter Olympics are my favorite Olympics. If we have a battle between summer and winter, and I know almost nobody who agrees with me on this, but I enjoy the winter so much more. I feel like fewer events, more watchable events, quite honestly. I even watch the curling, which is ridiculous, but I do. And I think they're just much more enjoyable. What's your take on the Olympics?
I know people here in Utah specifically love the Olympics as a host city.
Sure.
Back in 2002, people just eat it up, summer or winter, but especially in the winter. I mean, I think it's different. It's outside of the major four sports in the U.S., and so it's something that is not what you see growing up as much for much of the United States, and so people love it. Maybe just a little bit different, something, yeah, you don't see every day. So
yeah.
I think that may be some of the allure behind it.
That is a nice thing about it. So since you're paying attention to things, let's talk a little bit about, am I pronouncing it right? Is it Pyeongchang?
Yeah, there was even a little bit of, sort of confusion even in recent months, whether it was going to be Pyeongchang or Pyeongchang. And I think the official American pronunciation is actually Pyeongchang. So, yeah, okay. We're going with that for February.
Pyeongchang. And one of the questions that always becomes a topic as we get close to the Olympics, and we're now 54 days away from the start of these Olympics, is how ready is the venue? Because a lot of times we have, I know in Sochi there were big issues with they're still finishing the buildings and everything's not ready, and even though they had years and years to get this ready, it's such an expensive endeavor, a lot of times countries end up a little bit behind. How prepared is South Korea for these Olympics?
Well, this is a drastic departure from what we even saw in Rio just, 18 months ago or so, or a little less than 2 years ago. But the Olympic venues, as far as we have been told, are either completely done or very close to it. In fact, most of the venues have already had test events this winter, and even going back to last winter, some venues had test events. So this is much different than what we've seen in the past two Olympic cycles where it appears as though everything is on track, everything's ready to go, and that's a little bit of a nice thing, especially with Rio and Sochi, where there have been so many concerns about those venues being done, and like you mentioned, in some cases, I think they're still being built, but
yeah.
Yeah, it looks like everything's pretty much ready to go.
And how are the security issues? We've got the North Korea situation that's been quite a topic the past year, and South Korea's, stuck in the middle of all that. What are the concerns as we head into these Olympics?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest concern is the political situation, obviously going on between North Korea, everything on the Korean Peninsula, between the South Koreans, the Japanese have been in the headlines. And then, of course, our situation in the United States, where there's been a lot of tough language between two leaders of countries. And, it's certainly, I think, the highlighting security concern. But what we've been told through our folks who are heading this up is that, this is something that the South Koreans have dealt with for 70 years, are these threats and being so very close to an extremely tense situation. And Pyeongchang, some of the mountain venues are in some instances less than 50 miles away from the DMZ, the demilitarized zone there along that border with North Korea. You're talking about some pretty close proximity to some pretty tense stuff. But, they say they dealt with this before. In fact, not something that is actually too different security-wise than what we saw here in Salt Lake in 2002, which came on the heels of 9/11. Where there was a tremendous security, where there was a lot of anxiety about what could happen, what would happen, and ultimately the games went off without a hitch. And so that's what they're hoping to, have here again, is that, there's been a lot of buildup, but that the Olympics are something that bring people together. That term that you always hear news folks say, cautiously optimistic, I guess.
Yeah, when we refer to the 2002 Utah Olympics, I think two very similar yet very different situations, right? Because that was in the U.S., within the U.S., without any other borders close by that would be concerning. I know that you're bringing a lot of people from foreign countries in, so there's that, and the threat of a small-time terrorist act at an Olympic venue is scary. Here, it seems like the concern would be a little more, not that there's going to be some sort of lone wolf incident, but you've got this big bad dictatorship, as you said, not too far away. I mean, only 50 miles away, we worry about hydrogen bomb testing, but they could send small-time rockets 50 miles away if they really wanted to cause a problem. I think the general consensus is they're not going to do something like that. But you do wonder if Kim Jong-un is going to try to rattle the world by doing something while the Olympics is going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on with what the fear is, and that's worst-case scenario. But, we just heard, I think this week or maybe 10 days ago or something in that span that there's 5,000 security officers. They don't have any sort of indication. The defense systems in South Korea are tremendous. What we've heard about, especially in conjunction with the United States recently, with some of the military drills that they do annually and have for decades there. Our understanding is that everything is as prepared for as possible, and that every sort of plan B is in place should something happen. But again, the thought is that the Olympics bring the world together and, shouldn't be lost on the fact that North Korea participates in the Olympics. They participated in Rio, and all indications are that they will have their delegation, albeit small, in Pyeongchang as well.
So they do have a delegation. You said, albeit small, is it like 50 people or less? I would imagine it is relatively small, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's less than that. Yeah, it's funny, sort of a side note. I was in Rio in 2016, and we actually were leaving the Rio airport. I remember distinctly, like this was yesterday, we were actually getting food in a food court in the Rio airport, and we saw the Republic of Korea, uniforms. The I believe it's the DPKs or the DRK or whatever the initials are, and you see them walk by in a very sort of odd, manner, sitting in a food court like you might be in any other major airport in the world, and here come the North Korean athletes just walking by, heading on a flight back to North Korea. I would say it's probably less than perhaps even a dozen or something. I want to say we saw something in the area of maybe less than 10 athletes in the summer games, which there are a lot more athletes. So I would say, yeah, probably a handful. They compete just like a lot of other countries around the world.
I wonder what the restrictions on them are, because there'd be a concern, I would imagine. Any athletes they send into South Korea might want to stay in South Korea and not go back.
Right.
Or heard at all about how that delegation is? Are they treated so well because they're athletes that it's easy for them to go back home? It's unlikely they'd want to leave, or they'd be scared maybe of what would happen to their family if they didn't return home?
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty. I remember we had that very conversation, like, what do you do if you're a North Korean athlete and you're going halfway around the world in so many instances where North Koreans have been precluded from being able to even leave the borders of North Korea on a regular basis? To be frank with you, I don't know what that pressure is like. I can only imagine the security and sort of the keeping in line of those athletes has got to be tremendous. We saw that in the airport. I mean, just security around them, and it was sort of surreal almost in a sense, because obviously there's been tension with North Korea for decades. To see them in a very public scenario like that is something different. But I can only imagine there's probably intense scrutiny. There's probably, a sense of even national pride. I don't know. But I would venture a guess to say that they probably don't take much of a chance on athletes who they think might defect or something like that. Yeah. That would be my best guess.
Yeah, I imagine they don't want to lose anybody, but also just the black eye that would be. I'm sure the public relations of that would be very unsettling for Kim Jong-un. And what do you make of Russia being banned from these Olympics because of systematic doping not only allegations, but a lot more than allegations, if they've banned almost the entire Russian delegation. I know that certain athletes can apply if they can prove that they haven't been involved, but they'd have to participate with no country affiliation, which is kind of very interesting. I know that's happened at the Olympics before, but that's such a weird sight. And for Russia to be the ones getting accused of that, I imagine Vladimir Putin isn't happy about that, although I believe I've heard and read that he will allow athletes to participate if they can get accepted by the Olympic Committee. I'm kind of surprised by that. What's your take on what's going on with the Russia situation?
Yeah, that was also news this past week or so, that they would be able to participate under the neutral flag, and they would be an Olympic athlete from Russia, not a Russian athlete. They won't wear Russian uniforms. They won't have the Russian national anthem played at the podium if they should win a medal. And that's, you know, an interesting development for sure. We heard about it, you know, really starting in Sochi and in the immediate aftermath of those games, that there could have been some concerns with doping. And then, you know, to have this situation, you had, I think it's six or four, I believe six female hockey players from Russia that have been banned for life from the Olympics this past week. And so, yeah, that's a huge story. Now, I mean, what does that mean long term? I think the IOC still has a lot to go through. This kind of caught a lot of people, not say off guard, but it definitely was a surprise to have this happen, you know, within 2 months of the Olympics, I think. But, yeah, it's a turn of events. Again, I think it showcases just that, you know, the Olympics are sort of a kind of event that sort of transcends politics in a way. I mean, it seems like every cycle we've had something, whether it was Zika before Rio or the political unrest before Sochi, the past few cycles. And in this instance, it looks like they're trying to get it right, the Russians, by allowing their athletes to compete. Because, again, these athletes are, as you guys know, I mean, people that have dedicated their lives, their money, and oftentimes their families' lives to be able to train for one moment. So, you know, I think if you can draw a positive from it, that is positive, that it seems like the Russian delegation is going to allow them to compete. However, you know, still quite the black eye that they've been implicated in something so wide ranging that it appears as though this has been ongoing for years, and that it was well known and in some cases approved through the Russian Olympic Federation. And so, yeah, there will be a lot of fallout, I think. Probably a lot of scrutiny and a lot of drug testing going on as well in the days leading up to those games.
Well, and Andrew, I don't remember hearing a lot from Putin other than that he's going to allow these athletes to try to participate. I'm surprised he hasn't been fighting back and saying this is false or fake news, or, you know, that this isn't real, that we're being, you know, railroaded, something like that. Has the Russian delegation pretty much accepted this ruling and kind of acknowledged, okay, we're going to clean this up?
Yeah, the language that we heard over the past week, again, was something along the lines of, yeah, well, we don't agree with what you found, the IOC, but all right, we're going to accept your ruling. So a little curious, as always. Again, you know, similar to the North Korea situation, you don't get a lot of direct communication. You hear a lot of sort of back channel, I guess, sort of information. You know, they said they were going to fight some of it, but being so close to an Olympic period, that they were going to move forward with what the IOC was suggesting. Yeah, I don't know what that means. It's kind of interesting that you didn't hear some bombastic retort from Putin saying, this is ridiculous, this is preposterous. But I think going under the assumption that they can compete as an Olympic athlete from Russia, rather than going completely, like we've seen in the past, when refugees have competed under the Olympic flag, they simply don't have a country. In this instance, you know, there'll be an Olympic athlete from Russia. You just won't hear the Russian national anthem played during a medal ceremony. You know, some differences between the uniforms perhaps as well. It's pretty curious that you didn't hear some major retort, because that seems to be Vladimir Putin's reaction to everything.
Right.
You know, how could this possibly have happened, et cetera, et cetera. So curious indeed, but, you know, I mean, you kind of scratch your head like you do maybe a lot of other things.
Well, and if you heard it all, I would imagine that heads are rolling in Russia over this, that either he's up, one of two things is Putin's upset that they were cheating so much and he didn't realize it, which is unlikely, or he's really upset that they you know, this all came out and they got caught in this way. So you got to imagine, maybe we're not hearing about it, but you got to imagine some people are in a lot of trouble over there, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and rightfully so. I mean, if this was something that was rampant throughout their federation, which it appears it was, at least on a degree of, you know, within their ranks. Now, I mean, how far does it go outside of their Olympic, you know, federation? Who knows? But yeah, I mean, certainly you'd think that heads are rolling there. And you know, you got to think about it too. I saw some interesting stuff on social media over this past week of people who came in fourth place behind a Russian, and they were sort of unceremoniously given a bronze medal because of the retraction from what happened in Sochi and what happened in Rio. They took away a lot of those medals that Russians had won, and you know, the athletes that competed that actually finished in the top three, they get a medal in the mail or something. You know, FedEx comes and delivers your Olympic medal a couple of weeks later. It's not exactly a great sign for Russia, and it sort of takes away a moment from an athlete who is rightfully deserving of a medal.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think there's probably a lot of head rolling, and I think they'll take a long look at moving forward. You know, this is the cycle from summer to winter. It's a little bit shorter than it is from winter to summer, because we'll now have until what, August 2020, before the games in Tokyo. And so I think there's going to be more to come out of this from the IOC. But again, you know, maybe caught a bit flat-footed with this ruling coming just, you know, like you said, 58, I think, at the time, you know, within certainly 2 months of the games.
Andrew Wittenberg is a reporter, a news anchor in Utah. Hold on 1 second, Andrew. I don't know if he can stick around a little bit. Just talk to him off the air, because we had to take a quick break and do the 3 o'clock news. I would love to talk about the U.S. saying they might not be involved in the next one. We'll see if Andrew can hold on for a couple of minutes here and talk a little more. 720 WGN. Thank you, Roger. Matt Babal here with you on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Showcase studio, we're speaking with Andrew Wittenberg of KSL. He's a news anchor and reporter in Utah, and he is going to be in Pyeongchang, South Korea, for the Olympics coming up in, what, about 50 days you'll have there? Do you get to go there a few days before the Olympics start, Andrew?
Yeah, well, I think it's February 2nd when we leave, and we get back on the 27th, after a couple days after the closing ceremony. So, yeah, it's a long trip, but 50 some odd days away until we get back in action.
3 full weeks in South Korea. So let me ask you, because you've been to Olympics before, South Korea, I don't know how adventurous of an eater you are, but I imagine it's not like American food mostly when you're over there. But when you are at an Olympic event and it's such an international delegation, how much do they try to cater to that, or is it incumbent on you to be real adaptable to the environment that you're in?
Well, thankfully, I'm a pretty adventurous eater, so I'm pretty pumped about it, actually. Korean food is awesome. In fact, I'm doing a couple of stories this next week for KSL about some Korean restaurants here in Salt Lake to kind of get people acquainted with the idea of what you can eat beyond kimchi and Korean barbecue, you know, what you might have heard of. But yeah. No, it's nice. You know, the great thing with going through NBC, you know, it's like an army that travels for NBC for the Olympics and, you know, North American coverage of the games. And so we actually have like a sort of cafeteria kind of thing. So, you know, thankfully, if you want it, you can get pizza and fries just like you can in anywhere else. You know, it's not quite Chicago-style deep dish or anything. But,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, little comforts of home. If you want some chicken nuggets, you can grab those.
Yeah, I guess you really are lucky to work for NBC, because I'm guessing the affiliates for ABC and CBS aren't necessarily sending somebody to the Olympics, because it's got to be weird for the other networks, because NBC, you know, is the exclusive broadcaster of it. So while they follow the Olympics, they don't want to give too much publicity to the Olympics, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's like a double-edged sword for a lot of media organizations, because you'll see all of the networks will be there. But I must say, you know, I mean, going to Rio was my first Olympics to cover in 16. And, you know, you see sort of the ESPN folks and all of the major networks and stuff that are normally traditionally the powerhouses of a sports product. They're sort of on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
All of the varying, you know, rights holders and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic for sure with regard to like media and how it all plays out and who has what kind of access. It's for sure very interesting, if you like that sort of thing.
Is it going to be weird for you to be at an Olympics that Bob Costas is not at?
Yeah, no kidding. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
I mean, this will be really interesting. Now, first of all, you got to say Mike Tirico is one of the best in our business.
Sure.
So he's going to do great in prime time. But yeah, I mean, sort of an odd passing of the torch. And, you know, I know Chicago and Cubs fans have an interesting relationship with Bob Costas being a St. Louis guy. But, you know.
Yeah, but he's no Joe Buck. It's not like we have issues with Bob Costas here in town. Joe Buck is the one who can't really walk through town very easily, I think.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, or much less Jack Buck, you know, back in the day,
yes.
Right? In the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But, yeah, no, it's an interesting time for sure. I mean, I think the face of broadcasting is changing, as you guys probably know very well. The way things are covered, the amount that they're covered, the social media presence, it's a very different world, and it seemingly changes. And so this is going to be an interesting Olympic cycle where we see a very tangible face that is changing for primetime Olympics here in the U.S. I mean, it's been Costa since, I think, 92 in Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a whole generation of kids who only have watched the Olympics with Bob Costas.
I mean, not even kids. I mean, I don't remember who was hosting primetime Olympic coverage. You know, I'm 35 years old. I don't remember who was hosting it before Bob Costas.
And I guess I don't,
for that matter, too, you know, to not see Matt Lauer there with the Today Show. He's been covering Olympics since 96 in Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, this is a different time, and that for an altogether different reason, but for sure, I mean, this is a different look, a different, you know, sort of optics behind the actual face of broadcasting for NBC.
And I imagine things have been planned for quite some time. Is the Today Show, usually NBC pulls out all the stops, wants to send as many people there as they can. You guys pay an insane amount of money for this, so you know, do whatever you can out there. I imagine the Today Show is planning to broadcast from there, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a big deal. In Rio, they were on the Copacabana Beach for the Today Show, which was really cool to see. And, you know, I'm a morning guy. You know, I'm kind of, you know, in that cycle. So we usually try to embed with the Today Show for a couple of days and see what everything's going on over there. And they always have a lot of great guests and stuff. And so we'll go over and do a couple of days with the Today Show and the whole gang there. So, yeah, they'll have a big setup, I'm sure, once again. And you know, it's kind of nice, you know, working here in Salt Lake, and there is such a fever about Olympics and about that just industry that people are really interested in it, and they respond well to all the coverage. And we send being a host market, a lot of folks. We will have a cast and crew of five just from Salt Lake that will go through, you know, NBC, and we'll have coverage around the clock as well.
All right, so let's talk for a minute about this. So Russia's not going, although their athletes can. A listener had called and said that he believes that the whole drug issue started for Russia after 2010 when Putin was getting upset about how Russia was performing at the Olympics, that there was pressure put on the Olympic delegation to start performing better, and maybe that's where a lot of this came from. I was just reading a story while we were in the break about Putin, and he announced that he would be running for re-election the day after this ban came down, and he did make a comment about it. Oh, God, where was it? It's just in this New York Times article. What he said about it was he did kind of dismiss it as politicizing, and, you know, he did deride it a little bit. And, he quote, absolutely staged and politically motivated decision is what he said. So as we go into Russia's not going to be there, some athletes can be there. But then I believe it was Nikki Haley at the UN a few days later said the U.S. hasn't fully decided, or something along the lines of the U.S. will be reviewing or deciding if we will send our delegation, which I thought was a very odd comment because we had heard nothing about any concerns the U.S. had had. And then suddenly once Russia is, you know, there's a lot of people who would conspiracy theorize this because of the whole collusion investigation, and suddenly Russia gets banned, and then somebody from the U.S. is saying, well, we're not sure if we're going. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of out of the blue as well, and believe me, that caught us off guard when Nikki Haley said that, U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Donald Trump had been asked, I think, a couple days before that in like a press gaggle. It wasn't even like any sort of press conference, but had been just kind of asked off the cuff at an event. Hey, what's going on? Are you going to send U.S. athletes to South Korea for the Olympics? And it may have been on the heels of some North Korea questioning or something. And he kind of said, we'll take a look at it. And then Nikki Haley came out with that statement that says, we'll review it. And we'll, you know, and I mean, I can't imagine that there was a lot to that, because while there is, and oddly enough, there has been some pretty significant concerns in recent Olympics, you know, with Sochi and the Russian tension, then with Zika before the games in Rio.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I think skepticism in some regard, but also it has thankfully wound up being relatively small in comparison to what actually happens, you know, between the lines on these competitive events. And so it's kind of, it was a head scratcher, quite frankly. And then, you know, they came out, I think, the next day after Nikki Haley's statements and said, all right, yeah, we're going to send the delegation. Everything's fine. Everybody calm down. But, yeah, certainly curious as to the timing. And I think, again, that's what we talk about a lot, you know, of course, is timing with all of these comments and what in the world, you know, facilitates these comments at a particular time. You know, that's what's maybe more curious than anything, because certainly, you know, if something were to happen with regard to North Korea, they would probably look at making some changes, or probably look at figuring out what they were going to do, if anything, if they were going to pull back a delegation and not send one. But, yeah, I mean, that's just sort of odd, wasn't it? And so, you know, they came out the next day after that and said, well, yeah, I mean, we're still planning. And the U.S. Olympic Committee came out and said, well, and it seemed like they were caught off guard as much as anybody. Like, yeah, we're planning on sending everybody. Like, everything's in motion. Because, I mean, you got to think, with regard to nutritionists and advanced people, the U.S. delegation will go out there weeks ahead of time.
Sure.
You know, probably right after Christmas to get everything set up, to work on some of the training. You know, I know, for instance, we've got the U.S. Speed Skating World Championships here in Salt Lake this weekend. And then after that, I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's a lot of the Olympic spots are going to be taken this weekend here in Salt Lake. And beyond that, then they're all eyes on South Korea. And so I know one of the guys who won a gold medal here in Salt Lake, Derek Para, was a household name for a time in the speed skating world and was one of the faces of our Olympics. Yeah, he's going to be over there weeks in advance. So I don't know that there was a lot of consultation with those comments, because there will be a lot of folks getting pretty close to heading out of town after Christmas and the first of the year.
And what about the NHL players not participating? Is that going to affect the games much? I know that the hockey isn't the largest draw in the Olympics. It was probably more beneficial for the NHL than the Olympics itself to have NHL players, although maybe that would be debated who benefited more from that. But now we're going back to amateurs, at least as far as, I guess, the American and Canadian teams. What do you expect to see from the hockey?
You know, I mean, that's, I mean, for a guy that, you know, like myself, I'm a hockey fan, and, you know, not to, you know, put down all the Hawks fans there in Chicago and everywhere else, but, you know, I grew up in Nashville, I'm a Preds fan, and, you know, yeah. It's almost a shame in a way to see that you won't see Taves in a U.S. sweater there.
Well, you wouldn't see Taves in a U.S. sweater.
You wouldn't? Is he a Canadian guy?
Yes, he's a Canadian guy. Now, don't be giving me I grew up a Nashville fan when they've only been there like 8 years. Yes, you ran us out of the playoffs in four games last year. Fine. But don't act like you grew up with a hockey team your whole life.
You owed us one after, what, 3 or 4 years ago when we were up 3-1, I guess, and the Hawks came back. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think, I'm honestly, my gut reaction would be the biggest change there would just be ratings. I mean, ratings would be through the roof, although, you know, you've got a big time change difference, so it may not be in prime time or what have you in the United States. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a tension around Olympic hockey when you've got the best players in the world in sort of a different format. Like we said, the optics are different. You don't see ski jumping every day. You don't see luge with people hurling down a track at 70 miles an hour every day. In this instance, you don't get to see all of the best Canadian players. You know, I'm sure they're varying, you know, demonstrations or what have you every once in a while, but you don't see the best Canadian players. You don't see the best U.S. players on ice together, you know, maybe, and even in the All-Star Challenge that changed so much in the NFL or in the NHL, you don't see the best players on the ice competing with each other and against each other all the time. And so I think, to me, that's probably the biggest difference, because the hockey is going to be great. You know, they have some pretty high-level athletes coming from the U.S., so we've heard, albeit they're not household names. But, you know, that's probably the biggest disappointment, I would think, from an Olympic standpoint, is that you're not going to have those big names there. And then certainly I think it hurts the NHL too. I think it's, it, it's a brand that, you know, it's one of those where you need as much exposure as possible. And that's a shame. And, you know, personally, I would love to see those guys out there.
But, yeah, I agree. I think it's a bad decision overall for the NHL. I don't know all the reasoning behind it. It sounded like it was about insurance and things like that, which I would think the NHL has enough money to cover that. And they were trying to get the Olympic Committee to pony up and things like that. But I do think you're right that the NHL always needs more marketing, especially on a huge international scale like that. And it would be good for them to have their players doing that. I know it messes up the league here for the 1 year, but you would think the international attention would help the league overall. But I would think it might be good, Andrew, for NBC itself, because to me, a lot of the great parts of the Olympic broadcasts are the behind-the-scenes stories of these people, these athletes. And when it's professional players, I don't think those stories are ever as compelling because these guys are already rich and they've already got this career. And sometimes they've got a great story, but maybe it's already been told. And now you'll have true amateurs again. I would imagine that's what the team is going to be made up of, college kids and upcoming high school kids, things like that. So I think for NBC, you guys will get a little better perspective. And quite honestly, wasn't it the Utah Olympics where our NHL players behaved pretty badly, our U.S. players, after they got eliminated early? Was it?
Which was sort of, and I don't remember specifically, I wasn't here. I do remember, you know, when they came back after Nagano. So I guess Salt Lake would have been the first games, or perhaps they were back, the NHL guys were back in Nagano in 98. But, you're right. And I think that's what the proponents of this have said, is that, wait a second now, you know, and it always has been. We've had the Dream Team. We've had USA Basketball put a bunch of NBA guys out there. That's always been the argument, the counter, right, that this isn't exactly an amateur event. This is more of a spectacle of, you know, the greatest players on earth, including on some exhibition. I think you could make that argument. I would say that the NHL, who seemed to be the party that was more on the side of, well, this is going to mess with us, so we don't want to send them, that could maybe hurt the NHL from a global brand standpoint. But you're right. I think, and, you know, frankly, it's about ratings and exposure with the Olympics as well. And so while, yes, I agree that for sure that's awesome and you'll get some great stories, I'm sure some of these U.S. hockey players are fantastic. And I don't know that they're necessarily a medal favorite, but they'll be there. I think that's great and I think it's awesome. But will that move the needle as far as ratings go? I don't know. Certainly that's what I love about covering the Olympics, are these sports that we don't see every day and all the great stories that come out of it, just because, I mean, it's what catches our attention when something catches us out of nowhere. I'm hoping for the best, but at the same time, that's definitely going to be not to say a black eye for these Olympics, but I think it may be something that will get a lot of attention, more so on the fact that the NHL guys are not there rather than the amateur sports angle of it, if I'm trying to make that clear.
What is the time difference in Pyeongchang?
I want to say it's either 14 or 16 hours ahead of us on mountain time. So what's that, just a little bit more for you guys on central time? Yeah, it's something like that, 14, 15, 16 hours, somewhere in there. But the good news is, you know, NBC trying to adapt with the whole social media landscape and, you know, people losing their minds about spoilers and stuff lately.
Yeah.
They're going to do everything across all time zones live. So we're going to have a lot of early mornings and late nights where we're talking about something that's just happened at 8:00 in the morning, and it's going to be, you know, 6 p.m. the night before here in the States. So
that's really
an interesting coverage aspect too, from how in the world do we do this.
It's really fun though, I think, for us viewers to, you know, in the old days when it was like basically covered on the wide world of sports, you'd see things in tape delay or you wouldn't know. And it is kind of neat now at 8 a.m. on a day to be able to turn on some event and just have it on. I think it's really cool and it's a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to it. Andrew Wittenberg, a news anchor reporter at KSL in Utah, he'll be out in Pyeongchang. And I hope we can talk again, Andrew. I really appreciate you coming on and enlightening us with what you know about these upcoming Olympics. And we'll be following it. We'll check in with you again, okay?
Anytime. Great to chat, man. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Andrew Wittenberg. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook, KSL.com out of Utah. All right. Take a quick break. We'll get to the news next, 720 WGN.